Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 7th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, are you one of those guys that likes to watch or at least follow certain people when it comes to movies or shows? Like, if somebody is a really good, you like the movie, then the director was, you know, somebody that you might follow their movies or something like that. Who?
Connie Britton.
Oh, so you.
Amy Adams.
So
Kate Winslet.
Connie Britton. So you watch like Nashville?
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Wow. So
you've seen Connie Britton?
I watched that show. When I get a chance. All right, so
I'm even watching American Horror Story for Connie Britton. That stuff keeps me up at night, man. That is some scary crap.
Yeah, but, well, she was only on the first season of that show.
That's right. It's like we already said, hey, after the first season, done.
That's right. You couldn't
I'm
take it anymore.
Sleep over somebody less attractive than Connie Britton. Sorry.
You know, I liked Family Guy to a point. Eventually, I got kind of tired of it. And I think it was because really Seth MacFarlane got so busy with all the other stuff that he was doing that he kind of let go of the writing of the shows. And, you know, so I stopped watching it. But whenever he does something, like I loved Ted, the movie.
Of course, yeah.
You know, and I like, even when he like hosted the Oscars, I thought he was hilarious. I thought it was good. So I figured he's coming out, he came out with that show Dads and on Fox. And I thought, well, I liked the cast. Like everybody in the cast I liked at some point or another for some reason. So I was like, all right, I'm going to give the show a try. So we've been watching it, and, you know, it's kind of slow going, but it was fun, and I've continued to watch it, give it a chance. And this week, they had a poker game on the show, and it was between these basically the premise of the show was these two friends who run a business. Sound familiar?
No, I haven't heard of anybody like that.
But they somehow get involved with the mafia. Because they are coming out, they have a video game business, and they're going to come out with a mafia video game. But they needed somebody to help them with the authenticity of it, so they somehow get a mafia member to come in and tell them how things go in the real mafia world. Blah blah blah.
I think that's pretty easy these days, because I mean, no one's really making money in mafia. Everybody's got to like outsource and stuff now. You know,
that's true.
Reinvent yourself, right?
That's true, and it's actually kind of scary now that I think about it. Because I remember now you're like a mafia buff. So I'm kind of getting scared here. But what's really funny was they, you know, somehow get into a poker game with the guy from the mafia and his mafia friends.
Of course they do.
And one of the business partners, unbeknownst to his other business partner, gambles away the company. Now, it brings up a lot of questions for me here.
Was this dramatic? I mean, I know it's a comedy, right? Was there a pink slip thrown into the...
No.
I see your 10,000 and I raise you my business.
No, it was actually kind of the opposite, although, yes, they did do the stupid Hollywood stuff of string raises and ignoring table stakes. But it was kind of the opposite. It was kind of like the mafia guy had all the chips, and he went all in. And
pretty hard to call when he's got all the chips.
Yeah, he's got pretty much all of it. Yeah. So the other guy only had a little bit of stack, and he's like, well, how can I call? I only got this. So already, boom, they don't know poker.
Of course, yeah.
And there goes the table stakes thing. So he's like, well, I'll tell you what. If you win, you get to keep all my money. And then if I win, I get your business.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, the guy's like, oh, no, I couldn't do that. My partner over there, he's passed out, and I have to talk to him about it, you know, because they're all drunk at the table.
So it's you losing the business.
I know, exactly, which is exactly what I have to bring up now, Scott. I need to talk to you about something because I may have faux pas'd when I played poker with my family last weekend. And I think my dad's now our boss. So... but I did, it reminded me of the time when the, was it the Tobey Maguire Hollywood game where the guy lost a bunch of money to them and he sued him?
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I wondered, it was interesting to me, and here are the questions. One, could he really gamble away? I mean, how binding would that be if he said, yeah, if I throw in Annie Up Poker Media into the middle and I lose, how binding could that be? And I'm not talking about yams here. I'm talking about legally. Yeah. And then two, it's like, could he enforce this? You know, like that guy who sued in court, it's kind of like, yeah, officer, if you arrest me for, you know, marijuana, I'm going to sue you for knocking down my door, you know, when you came into the house with a raid. You know, you can't, if you're doing something illegal, can something within what's illegal be sued for? Like that guy who sued Tobey Maguire, they were playing an illegal house game for millions of dollars or whatever it was. You know, how do you sue somebody for doing something that's illegal? It's like saying he stole my pot, you know, or he's in pardon
the
pun.
That's not illegal in two states now, so.
Pardon the pun there. But no, I know, but, you know, okay, crack. He stole my crack. You know, I was just curious about the way this, it was funny because what ends up happening is the guy ends up owning the business and then they get out of it later by doing another favor for the mafia, as they say. So, but it did make me laugh thinking, you know, if I had gotten into a big game and said, I bet Annie up, and then the guy won, I'd have to go to you and say, hey, guess what? I lost our business. And you'd say, well, you can't lose my half of the business. And then
I'm just going to say, you're going to be happy when that happens, then I'm passed out.
That's your passed out. Exactly. And it, of course, it was Hollywood, and it was funny. It was hilarious and stuff. But it did raise a lot of questions. You know, one, can you just throw something in the middle that's intangible like that if you ignore table stakes, which... I don't know. I suppose if you all agree to it, you could. But two, you know, what other than killing him, what grounds did the mafia guy have if he said, you know, I'm not going to give you my business now? He couldn't go to the cops and say he owes me his business, could he? It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, first thing I'll say is that if you find yourself in a poker game, I'm talking to our entire listening audience, all seven of you right now. If you find yourself in a poker game and you feel compelled to throw an object in the pot to win the hand, I want you to stop for a minute, Google, has anyone ever won in Hollywood when betting an inanimate object, like a house, a car, a business,
watch,
a wife?
Yeah. Wife.
And see what Google comes up. I'm going to say that there's probably 100% chance that the answer is no. And therefore, you should say, you know what? I know I have the royal flush, but there must be a way I'm going to lose this and not do it. So that would be the first thing I would say. Now, let's say, you know, hey, your phone died because you were, you know, tweeting all day and stuff, and you only had one bar or something, and you couldn't Google all that, and you just took a guess. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure there might have been a sitcom at some point where someone won this way. Totally wrong, right? And you did it. I would say, yeah, you know, I mean... You can sue anybody for anything, right?
I guess. It's just
whether you win or not is a different story, but...
It's like, okay, I killed this guy, but I slipped and fell in his kitchen on my way out. You know, I'm going to sue him for... Well, he's dead. Well, you're going to win the suit, but you're going to be in prison for life for a murder.
Well, that stuff happens all the time. You know, robbers trying to break into your house and slip and fall and sue. You know, I don't know if anybody's ever won doing that, but... Like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can sue somebody. They don't ever tell you that they win when they do.
But again, just suing is enough to win sometimes. You know, it's expensive out there, all our lawyer friends. Any of you want to do pro bono work for us? Not that we have anything coming up. But
you just never know.
You never know.
But it's a good show. I mean, like I said, pretty much everybody in the show is like, I like them from some other show or something else. And the writing's pretty decent. I did wonder how long it was going to take for them to, you know, get into the stereotypical Italian and wreck them. The answer is 9 weeks. It took them 9 weeks to get to that point.
Well, I think the good news for you is I think it's already been canceled. So you only have four weeks before you don't have to worry about the Italian stereotypes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it goes to figure, too. The one time I say, oh, I'm going to watch a show. You know, it probably doesn't make it to the second season, so figures. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting because it's very similar to our situation. You know, two friends getting together. One's a crazy partier, and the other one's kind of, you know, remote and, you know,
doesn't remote. Really,
remote. stays away from everything.
Like Tom Hanks in Castaway.
Yeah. And they run a business, and they played poker, and one of them lost a business. So, Scott, I got something to tell you.
Well, I guess the last thing before we move on to our next item is that I couldn't be legally bound to commit the company in a poker game because you need two signatures.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Of course, this was the Mafia, so he could just said, you're going to agree.
I'll give him a pink gear, too. I don't even use him.
Well, speaking of Italian poker players, Dr. Frank wrote in, our good friend Dr. Frank Toscano.
Actually, I say Italian poker players using intimidation.
Yes. It's triple score here for Scott and the Words with Friends. So, he wrote in, and it's interesting. I actually reserved replying to him because I wanted to wait to talk about it on the show because I had some questions, like I always do. He says, I found a great use for the straddle, which, you know, a lot of people...
Impossible.
I think what he meant was he found a different use for the straddle. I think great is not the right word here, but...
Throwing that word great around, aren't we?
Yeah, he says, I was playing today at a 1-2 table with a player to my immediate left was being a real jerk. He said he didn't care if he telegraphed his intention to fold to some of the players, but not others. He'd fold out of turn and then get up in the middle of the hand and go smoke. He was criticizing other players. He'd make big preflop overbets from the button to force everyone out. It was clear that he felt that everyone at the table was beneath him. My strategy was to straddle when I was the cutoff, which would make him the button. Mm-hmm. And it would also make this guy first to act preflop. It completely neutered his preflop button action. He would limp for four, I would raise big, and he would fold. I loved it, and he never really caught on. He just got frustrated at losing his preflop button action. And he said it was a great trick for overly aggressive player on your left. So here's what I would like to say. I know I'm doing a lot of talking here, but
that's
you know,
fine.
I don't get to talk that very often with you around. So, one, it only works for one hand.
Yes.
Okay. Two, if he's overly aggressive, it seems to me that I don't think this guy was really overly aggressive because if he was really overly aggressive, he would gladly steal your dead money and raise preflop because he would still have the last action on you, especially because he's on the button. So if anything, he would just put in another, if he was overly aggressive, he would just put in another blind raise that would steal the straddle from you, or he would just re-raise and get you to waste $4. So I don't think this guy was terribly bright. And if he was overly aggressive, yeah, I mean, if he was overly aggressive, he'd be doing this all the time. It just sounded like he was an idiot to me, and then the only time he had the chance to be overly aggressive was when he made a big bet on the button. But... to me, I would think that this straddle that you're doing is really just taking care of one hand. So you still have 9 or 8 other hands you got to deal with this guy when you can't make the straddle. Or you could still straddle, but it wouldn't matter because he's not on the button on that hand. So to me, I understand what he's saying, but it doesn't seem... if the guy really was overly aggressive, right, he would obviously just re-raise you and keep his button. So
right.
I was kind of confused by this, but I figured I'd let Frankie have his moment, put him on the show.
Well, I would say, yeah, first of all, one more reason why we should not have straddles, and we should not have non-standard straddles.
Yeah, that was a weird straddle.
From the cutoff, you know. But again, you know, as people say, you know, if you're able to straddle from the button or any position, you know, it really does make sense to. So, you know, not going to criticize that. But, and one more reason I hate it. But, yeah, I think you're right, is overly aggressive or a bully.
Yeah.
It sounds like this guy's just a bully. He wants to be the big dog there, and I don't think he wants to be the big dog at all costs. It doesn't seem like, right?
Right.
He just, you know, hey, if a couple people limp, hey, $170! And it's just out of the action. But if somebody bets 60, I don't know if he's going to say $170, because I don't think he's going to shut down the action, right?
Right.
So, yeah, so I think he's more of a bully than an aggressive player. So the only thing I would say to the fact that it mitigates the fact that it only happens one hand around is that if he really does go super timid after Dr. Frank puts a beat down on him with the straddle, right?
Right.
Then the hope is that the guy to Frank's right will see that and say, you know what, I'm going to straddle too. And then, you know, it becomes like a domino effect. until finally Bully says, "All right, guys, I got it." Yeah. Which is not going to happen, right? Yeah. But that's the only thing I can think is going to is that a couple other people are going to see that it works and do it. Now, some people straddle for that very reason. I hope that everybody else straddles, makes the gameplay bigger. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there wasn't a seat at the 2-5 table, or maybe this guy just thought he could pistol whip the people at 1-2 instead, and that's where he wanted to play. But that's the danger of it, is it becomes a much bigger game than 1-2 at that point. But.
And I mean, I got the impression that it seemed like this guy was only being aggressive when he had the button. That's when because it says he'd make big preflop overbets from the button to force everyone out. So it sounded like to me that he was only being aggressive one time around. So yeah, you'd eliminate that. But I have to admit, I don't really recall actually playing in a game where you could straddle anywhere. Very rarely. I remember there was the button one, or there was right after the big blind, but I don't remember straddling just anywhere at any time.
Yeah, I think generally, I haven't seen a lot, but generally I think if you... I've seen it done two ways. Either it's a traditional straddle where it's under the gun, or a straddle where you can straddle from anywhere. And generally no one does it unless it's on the button. At that point, I mean, why do it anywhere else, I guess? Except for this case. But I'm sure everybody does it differently. But.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in Vegas, they made it very clear to people you can only do it on the button. Or you can only do it under the gun plus two, whatever the hell it is. So I had never seen that. At least I have not come across it where somebody just happened to straddle in the cutoff or the hijack or something. Because that's really confusing then. If you're known as a player that you can only do it from button, or you can only do it from next to the big blind, then it's like, okay, you know to pay attention to those two areas while you're playing. But if anybody, the guy on my right straddling, who the hell's going to know that? You know, I mean, then you're really relying on a dealer to pay attention to every single player, every single chip on the table.
Well, and I'll tell you the other thing that annoys me about it, too, is that you'll have somebody, the dealer's, you know, pitching cards, and he's like, "Oh, wait, can I straddle now?"
Yeah, exactly.
And the dealer has to stop and say, "Well, you haven't looked at your cards, so yes. There's no action." And, "Okay, great, I'm going to straddle." And then I'm like, "Fuck, sorry." I hate that. It introduces so much stuff that's just annoying.
Yeah, it totally changes the game, and it not only changes the game, but like you said, it slows it down. It becomes more annoying, and then all of a sudden, there's no rhythm to the game. You know, you can't. Here I'm thinking I'm under the gun plus four or whatever you want to call it, middle position two or something, and how do I have to play this hand? All of a sudden, boom, the guy on your right throws money out, and now you're under the gun. Well, now the value of this hand is completely different. I have to it's just not right. You just never get to play a real game for a round if all of a sudden you got two or three guys on there who like to just be, you know, and who gets to straddle then? See, that's why I don't think you're allowed to do it anywhere you want. It doesn't make sense to me. If the cutoff guy says, "I want to straddle," what if the other guy says, "Well, no, why do you get to straddle? I want to straddle." This is why it has to
I think there's a procedure, right? There. I think it's, you know, I forget exactly what it is, but there's a procedure I've seen that where, you know, there is an order to.
Oh, man.
And so if somebody decides to straddle, then obviously you can re-straddle over the top if you want. But.
Well, let's say the pot gets raked.
Yeah, it comes down to you need an NFL referee there to figure
it out. Exactly. The pot gets raked, and Frank throws out his $4 and the cutoff, and the guy to the right of him says, "Well, wait a minute, just because you did it faster, I'm first, I act before you, I should be able to straddle before you." And so then it's this whole, it just makes no sense. That's why it makes sense to have it, if you're going to have it, which makes no sense not to have it at all. We don't think you should have it. But if you did, it should be only one of two places. The rest of it, that's just crazy talk. But whatever. I hope I don't have to play that way with someone, because I wouldn't want that. And if you have anybody out there who can actually, you know, organize a game and be in a position of power like this, make sure that there's no straddle from any position, because you're only going to piss off a lot of people.
Then maybe that's what you want to do.
That's true, too. But in this case, he only wanted to piss off one person. And I think he probably pissed off the whole table. And that's probably why no one else was straddling.
I don't know about that. Generally, I think when you have one of these boorish players, and that's my word for this guy, boorish, I think everybody at the table secretly, whether they let it out or not, is hoping someone takes them down. Because it always happens when that person gets knocked out, you know, felt it, and gets up and leaves. And then all of a sudden, the table becomes super chatty.
Yeah.
Like, "Oh my gosh, that guy was a jerk." And no one has said anything for the last hour and a half, so the guy was being a jerk. But as soon as he's gone.
Well, we'll see. Next time Frank hosts a home game, we'll see if he allows a straddle in any position. All right, our listener spotlight. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emails us at podcast@antialphamagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This comes from Ryan. And he says, "Hey, Scott and Chris, love the show. Been listening for a few years now, but don't recall you ever discussing what got you guys into poker. Could you please say what got you both into poker and how you became so involved in it? I appreciate all the hard work you put into the show every week."
Aw, thanks, Ryan.
And we have answered this sort of, right, a few times, like in
passing. I'm sure
passing.
From time to time we have. But you know, it's a good reminder thing. And I think it's timely, too, because yesterday I was invited to speak at a University of South Florida class about Dante Up. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun to actually, you know, go all the way back from our beginnings, all the way back to the beginnings of the times with a podcast, and all the way to where we are here in 2014 now. So it's been a lot of fun. I would say what got me into poker, obviously I learned the game from my grandma like everyone has, and played a little bit for fun, and then had a couple like stupid home games when I graduated from college. You know, the dime quarter, follow the queen, that kind of crap.
Right.
And then took a break, and then I got interested again, or at least loosely interested, when Phil Helmuth won the World Series. I think I mentioned this on a previous show, because he looked just like me at the time. But didn't really play much, and then it was the Moneymaker thing at that point. I mean, slightly before the Moneymaker thing, I guess, when it was on TV, I'm like, I really got into it at that point, and met a couple other people, Faso, of course. Steve, I think he was kind of the glue that tied us all together. Because I talked to him at work, I'm like, "Hey, I'm thinking about getting that home game together." And he's like, "Oh, that's great." And we talked to a couple other people, got together. Somehow you got involved in that. And then from there, he got into the podcast. And once we got the podcast and blog, it just took off.
Right. When I was a kid, my father and the family always got together for their card night. They once a week, once a month, whatever it was. You know, they weren't very good, but they played, you know, they played all the same games, follow the queen and all that stuff. So I was very young, and they would play at our house, or they would take me with them, and I would chill and watch sports on TV while they played poker in the kitchen. But I would go and sit on my mom and dad's lap, whatever. I'm talking really young. And then when the night was over, if it was at my house, they would throw all their pennies on the ground for me, and the next morning I had to go pick up, and I'd have a little money, you know, to play or whatever. So that's how I sort of learned the game. But obviously I had sort of two stories that kicked off my thing. That one, and then one night I came home late from the Times, because I used to work sports, so I'd work the really late shift, and my stepson was up with his buddy at the kitchen table, and they had these little plastic, what looked like checkers, but they were smaller chips from another board game, and they were playing cards with them. And I'm like, "You guys are playing poker? That's cool." And they were playing Hold'em. And I was like, "Oh, wow. You know, I saw this on TV." But I didn't know how they were playing it, because I didn't pay attention to the rules at the beginning of the show. I'd caught it halfway through the show, and it was right around when Moneymaker was making his run. But it was on TV. And so I had no idea. And they said, "Oh, yeah, this is how you play it." And I was hooked from that moment. And it's funny that it gets brought up this week, because like you said, it was timely. You went and talked to that school. Well, the friend that my stepson doesn't live with us anymore, but because he's much older now, but he had hooked up with one of his buddies and it was the one that he was playing poker with that night. And he said to my stepson, he's like, "Hey, remember when your stepdad played poker with us that time?" And my son's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Well, now he's like this like publisher of a magazine for poker, and he plays poker all the time and wins money and stuff." And my stepson's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, shouldn't I get a cut of that? Because it wasn't for me to teach him how to play." And so it's pretty funny. That was this weekend, you know. And, but that's pretty much it. If I had come home and those guys were just playing some board game or whatever, who knows what would have happened. I may not have ever done it. And then, of course, I went to the Times and I started playing poker and doing pretty well. And then I saw Laura downstairs, and she said, I was talking to somebody about it, and she's like, "You play poker?" And she's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Yeah." And she goes, "Scott plays." I'm like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, it's a home game." So that's pretty much how it started. Because I knew you. I just didn't know you played poker.
Yeah.
You know, but Laura, when Laura brought it up, I was like, "Oh." So I messaged you, and next thing you know, I'm losing money to you guys for the first 6 months or so. And then But that's pretty much how I got into it, too. It's weird. I have two different stories because everybody learns how to play, and so do you. You have two different stories, you know. But then when you want to play for real money or really learn the game. So it really was the boom that got us into cards. It wasn't, essentially, because if it wasn't on TV, you may not have done it. And if it wasn't on TV, my kids would have never known about it and wouldn't have told me about it. So yeah, I guess we owe it to Moneymaker.
It's just kind of funny because in the class yesterday, I mean, as I was telling folks, you know, they're asking me questions about the company and stuff, you know, you keep remembering times that a ball bounced one way and had it bounce the other way, life would be completely different. And so this is the same thing. I mean, I literally sat next to Mike Fassel for years at the Times. Never really talked to him much. He was kind of a loner.
Yeah.
And then, but when we did talk, because he knew that I liked to gamble, and so we mentioned that he played poker, and that kind of opened it up. So, but if I didn't know he played poker at that point, if we never had that conversation, then I don't know whether I would have got a game going, because he was like the linchpin.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your conversation with Laura, and that's how we got together. You know, it's really kind of odd just how things seem to kind of work out. Kind of makes you, on the negative side, wonder what balls bounce the other way that you don't know about.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I mean, we could
be
billionaires.
Maybe a corner somewhere, and, you know, Bill Gates is going to say, hey, I'm going to start a poker magazine.
We could be homeless right now, too, so you just have no idea. But, yeah, it's pretty interesting. Well, I'm glad he brought that up so we could reminisce a little. But
yeah, thanks, Ryan.
It is true. It's amazing how things turned out.
All right, call the floor. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. And this week's comes from Todd Falstead. And he says, I was playing 1-2 no limit hold'em in a California card room, and a floor ruled an opponent was able to pay for his meal that he had ordered out of his stack before calling my raise, which put him all in. My opponent stalled his decision until the waiter was bringing his tray of food. Then he grabbed chips from his stack to pay for the full dinner, and tipped handsomely, mind you, before he finally called. Floor said it was okay for him to use the chips for his meal purchase and didn't care that he did so while his chips were in jeopardy. I thought that he should have paid cash, not chips, since the action was on him.
Okay, Jody says, it sounds like the floor call was probably correct based on their house rules. This situation will vary from house to house. Even though I believe this player was using the house rule to an unfair advantage, he was also minimizing the amount of money he could win if his hand were to hold up. The most agreeable version of this rule that I'm aware of is to allow players to use a percentage of their chips in play to pay for food or tournaments. A lot of places set the amount at 50%. Wow! 50%!
Yeah, that's a lot of food.
That dude, buy a $2,500 meal if you got $5,000 in front of you.
I imagine the 50% is more geared towards the tournament part, but
you know, but it's weird. I have to, I guess, agree with that because he also is losing the chance to win money. But it's but if he's making a nominal call and he knows, you know, whatever, I could pay for my meal first. It is kind of bizarre, isn't it?
I think what should have happened was that not only lost a stack, but
lost
Todd
a meal.
Had his dinner.
Yeah, here you go. Here's my steak and fries.
And they called the waiter over. The waiter had to give him the tip, and then Todd could decide how much he wanted to tip. That's what I would have ruled.
It's in California, so here's my green tea ice cream.
And then if I was Todd, what I'd do is I'd take the tray of food, and I'd walk it over and go, ooh, this is good, and then just dump it in the trash.
Okay, I see your $10 raise, and I raise you a porterhouse steak with mushrooms. It's so bizarre.
But no, in Todd's defense, I can see how this is going to give you the red ass, right? You're sitting there, you put this guy to a test, he's thinking about it, you can tell, obviously, he's got a weak hand, or he would have called you instantly, right? And he's looking down, and he's like, oh, man, I don't have to reach in my pocket to pay for my green tea ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, let me Hollywood here for a while. You know, well, Joe brings my tray of food over, and you just take it. I'm like, hey, that's my money. Hey, that's my money. Hey, and then call, and then yep, that's your money. Here's all that's left. And then watch him just chomp on that hamburger, and you know, grease running down his face because you know that's the kind of guy, right? That you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like you could, you know, angle shoot all the time now. You know, you're like, he got a really borderline call or not here, and you're like, hang on. Menu, you know, and then you get the menu brought over, and wait, I'm not going to make the call yet. Hang on, I want
to. Yeah, hold on. I got my happy hour special.
I'm going to order my meal first, so I don't have to pay you that much money, and I still get my dinner for free if I lose. But yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't sure that Jody was going to rule that way, but it is a house rule. That's the house rule.
Well, yeah, I think what's tough about this decision is if you do have a house rule where you can pay for stuff out of your stack, and there hasn't been a casino that I've been to yet where you're not allowed to pay for food out of your stack. If you have that rule, you know, do you have a subset rule that lets people know they're facing an all-in, you can't? You know, it doesn't seem like it makes sense, right? So, but the other flip side I'm curious about is, can you order food in the middle of a hand? You know, if you're sitting there and you're like, boy, all in, boy, gosh, boy, do you get the flush? hold on a minute, I forgot. I need to order my hamburger. And
drinks for everyone.
And then you're all in, you're like, no, hey, I got to keep the $10 here because I got, you know, got that burger coming away. You heard me, right? And I'm sure they would rule that that doesn't work, but I think it opens it up to that point too. But.
And then you lose the hand, and you say, you know what? I cancel my order.
I'm not hungry.
And then you keep the $10 and play with.
I'm not going to play in an establishment that allows me to lose that hand.
You walk away with
business across the street.
By the way, the meal I ordered was $60. Give me 50 back, will you? All right, we get to conclude O'Malley's
move. We get $25 in front of you, and you ordered a $40 meal.
You got
to
take the
money. You went all
back.
In. You're like, all right, well, I lost my $25, but you owe me $15 to pay the fee of the meal. It works both ways, right?
Oh, man. All right, we're going to conclude O'Malley's move today. Let's hear part one again.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $4-$8 Omaha 8 game. This is a regular game in this casino, and we're the youngest at the table by far, and the only non-regular. Oddly enough, these old guys love to gamble, and they splash around quite a bit. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, but the rest of the table calls to us, in the hijack, with the ace of spades, queen of diamonds, five of spades, four of hearts. We've got a suited ace and the potential to go either way, so we call. The cutoff calls, as does the button, small blind completes, and, ugh, the big blind raises. The plus one makes a snide remark before three betting. Groans and calls follow the action to us, and we call. Surprisingly enough, the big blind relents and calls also. There's already $56 in the pot, and the flop comes the queen of spades, eight of clubs, deuce of diamonds. The blinds check. Plus one leads out for $4. The MPs fold. We call. Cutoff calls. Button calls. And the blinds get out of the way. The turn is the six of spades. This is a pretty decent card for us. We've now got a nut flush draw as well as a straight draw. We've got a mid-low and top pair. This is where we decide to come alive. There's about $70 in the pot, and the plus one leads out again for $8. We make it two bets to go. Both players behind us fold, and the plus one three bets. We cap, he calls. There's a whopping $125 in the pot, and the river is the queen of hearts. This card gives us trips, but it completes a full house, and our low isn't an unbeatable one. Once again, our opponent leads out for an $8 bet. What are we doing here?
All right, maybe it's just me, but I don't see much of a decision here. I think it's unlikely that we have a scoop here. I think it's more likely that we are being scooped. So in that case, there's absolutely no reason to raise. I don't want to reopen the betting and have them, you know, three bet me here. And we're talking one last bet. We're going to close off the betting. There's a ton of money in this pot, so you can't fold because you got a legitimate shot at both sides, right?
Yeah.
To me, this is a super easy call.
I have to agree. It's pretty straightforward, but we'll see what happens in the result here, but it sounds like just a call is warranted as well, so here we go.
Hello again. We have the typical three options. We can fold, we can raise, or we can call. Folding seems pretty weak here. It's only one more bet into a massive pot, but remember, in limit, a bet saved is a bet earned. However, our hand is too strong to really consider this. We could raise here, but we don't have the nut hand either way, and this would risk us having to call a 3-bet, which, judging by his play, will be the most likely outcome. Calling seems like the best option, and that's what we do. Our opponent tables the ace of clubs, 8 of spades, 8 of hearts, Trey of clubs, and Scoops. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, limit games can really drain your bankroll if you're not careful. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, it looks like we're right. It was an easy call.
Yeah.
And we were wrong. Yeah. But I'll say this. He mentioned the limits about saving bets, and it is. But I think you got to remember that with a pot this large, you only have to be right once every dozen or so times for it to be profitable. So, you know, this is not a saving bet situation here. This is a profitable call to make, generally. So I think the only time it makes sense to fold to one bet on the river is when the chance of winning just is so incredibly remote that it's not worth throwing into that one in a dozen.
Right.
You know, when you've got, like, Deuce Trey, you know, and really you're playing for a split pot, and there's a flush and straight on the board. The guy's been betting the whole way. At that point, I'm like, really? Am I going to split the pot? Is that really even in the consciousness of possibility? No, I'm going to fold at that point. But other than that, you know, when I got a hand like this, absolutely, there's a very legitimate chance that you could have won at least half of this pot.
So. Yeah, I mean, it sucks, and it could have been worse. You could have been playing PLO 8. Right? I mean, you could have been facing a much bigger bet, and he's got a legitimate calling hand here with, you know, the second nut low. Is that what I'm reading correctly? Right? He had ace four, so he had the second nut low, and he had three queens. Was it three queens?
Yeah, three queens.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, to me, this is a no brainer. I'm not going to raise or anything, but really, you mentioned that you said that. We probably are being scooped, and then we did get scooped. But what are the odds that this guy has the exact hand that he had to scoop us? You know, I mean, I guess he could have made. Is there a straight in there somewhere?
Well, I'm gonna think the odds are pretty close because usually somebody has a nut low. Usually, I mean, not always heads up, but you know, I'm always gonna assume that somebody has a nut low, and so I'll give him credit for that. And usually, people are not strongly betting just the low, so I got to give them credit for some sort of high. So yeah, I think it's pretty.
It's just that the high in this hand is not like it's a straight. You know what I mean? It's not going to have like the wheel, and that's what makes it obvious that it beats our three of a kind. It's he has to have exactly pretty much a pair to make a boat and to make the nut low with ace tray. It just to me, I would have called no matter what because I didn't think he was going to win both halves. That
right.
Easily.
And even if you thought, I mean, you can't know that with any degree of certainty.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it a profitable play to still make that call. I think that by the way the action was going, I put him on a set from the beginning, I think, which he turns out to have. I mean, you just happen to actually have low cards to go with it.
Yeah. But,
so I think that's what I was more concerned about, not so straight and so much. I mean, when you're in your betting strong right away, I mean, that flop is so weird. I mean, we had two queen or a queen, right? So it's unlikely we had two queens, and if he's betting that flop strong, and it was 4-8, so who knows? But you know, if he's been that strong, I got to think it's a set that he's just trying to maximize value out of and protect.
Right,
and it makes it easier to bet that way because he had the nut low draw going with it. So
plus, everyone pretty much limped, right? And then the big blind. So it went pretty much limp all the way around, then a big blind raise, then another guy three bets, and that's the guy who ended up winning his hand. So he could have had pocket aces, I guess, and then three whatever. So that's a really legitimate hand that he could have done it, but why wouldn't he have raised earlier? So it's kind of weird that way it came down pre-flop, too.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the pre-flop, because that's what I meant to, I was going to write before I just decided there was no decision. I want to be clear that not be my normal verbose person in these, but I totally would have raised if I was O'Malley preflop.
Yeah,
you know, it limps to him in the hijack with a suited ace.
Yeah, and two,
queen
three,
and
three
four or five.
Cards. Yeah.
So I mean, you've got a lot of possibilities for this hand to be really big for you. And the reason I'm raising more so is that I want to drive out the ace trace. You're not going to drive out the ace deuces. That's never going to happen.
Right.
And 4-8, you're probably not going to get rid of the ace trays unless they have nothing else to go with it. But I'm going to put that shot in, and with a backup of I've got a pretty strong hand. I got Broadway. I got all kinds of straight possibilities. I got the nut flush possibility. I even got a steel wheel possibility in that hand. So even if I call it and I don't succeed in driving out the ace tray, I'm building a pot for the other side of the pot.
Right.
And, you know, what if a trade comes? You know, if nobody has ace deuce, then I've got the nut. So I'm definitely raising there.
Do you agree with the cap on the turn? The only reason why I ask is because I know he had the nut flush draw. He had a low draw, which still could have been the nut low draw. And he had a pair of queens. But when you bet the guy comes over the top, would you have capped it on the turn? Even though
I'm not
going to
cap there just because he was betting so strong.
Yeah,
at least the way that O'Malley was describing it. I mean, when you're there. I mean, if he's not betting so strong, I might. But I got the feeling that he really had this. He had one side locked up, and then really this. I mean, this kind of hand that you see, ace 8-8-3. You see that a lot,
yeah.
You know, where you're trying to figure out whether they're going high or low. This is why this game is so frustrating. You're trying to figure out somebody's going high or low, and a lot of times they're going both ways.
Yeah,
and they're able to bet strongly on one of them because they got great backup on the other end. And this guy, I mean, he was, you know, probably sweating the flush there, right? But right. But he knew, hey, I've got the low too, so or I've got the nut low, so I can bet with impunity. So.
That's the thing, because when he talked about in the second part about saving bets or whatever, that's where he should have done it. I thought he should have.
So. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe even just call the bet on the turn, not raise, and then when he three bets it, we don't cap it at least. So there's two chances there for you to save bets, and ended up costing him.
Excellent point.
Right. Yep. So, yep. All right. Well, it was a good O'Malley's move though. I mean, it taught a lot in there. Because if you think it could be out there, it probably is out there. So why not just call and get there as cheap as we can? It was a big enough pot as it was anyway. So.
Oh, huge pot. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, for 4-8.
Yeah, for 4-8, exactly.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiettemagazine.com. This one comes from our old friend Dan England, who, as we said from the show, is not really from England.
Yeah, that joke's getting kind of old. I think I got to stop bringing it up. I think we've said that like a million times.
But I don't know whether he's ever proven that he doesn't descend from people from England.
That's true. That's true.
You know, I'm sure you know how these last names come up, right? You know, so, you know, great, 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 great dad-daddy was probably hanging out in Ireland or something, and someone said, hey, that's Joe England.
Did you ever see Godfather Scott?
A long time ago.
Did you ever see Godfather 2?
Long time ago.
Well, how do you think he came, when he came to the country, the guy tried to read his name tag, and his last name was Andolini, and he looked at it and he goes, Corleone, and that's where he was from, and then he ended up becoming Vito Corleone. Same thing with Dan England's great-great-grandfather, who's probably like Dan Smith, or Joe Smith, and he looked at it and he went, Joe England, and that's how, you know, so that's probably how he got his last name. He probably, the people at you know, Ellis Island or something. I don't know. Who knows? But
yeah, now he's settled in Horace Greeley, Colorado.
That's right.
All right, so we'll do the hand before we lose any more listeners.
Yeah.
He says, I'm playing in a home game for the first time. I think I have a decent read on the two others in this hand. We are five-handed. I have the button, and blinds are nickel-dime.
All right.
He says, I know, but the poker is being played seriously. And then he emphasizes seriously. Hey, we believe you, man.
I believe it.
$10 buy-in for the day, too, you said. Okay. So the first person calls. We have two folds. The cutoff calls. And we are on the button with Ace of Diamonds, King of Diamonds.
All right.
And we are playing. This is no limit.
All right. So it's.
Specify that, but it is.
5-10. We got a couple of callers. So I don't see any reason why we shouldn't make it like 70 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That makes about. You know, especially if it's a $10 buy-in, you're betting almost 10% of your stack on a raise. So, you know, that's legitimate to me. You know, 30 cents would be a normal raise, likely. And you got a couple of limpers, plus it is micro limits, so 70
cents. And I think that's the important part. I mean, it's tough. The toughest part of the micro limits, I think, is that you want to play it like it's a $5, $10 game.
Yeah.
You know, for your learning's sake. But at the end of the day, it's not a $5, $10 game. It's
right.
$0.05, $0.10 game, and no one wants to lose $50 in a nickel-dime game, don't get me wrong, but people are a little bit looser when you're talking dimes than Hamilton's, right? So
yeah, and don't forget, too, if it's all relative, so I mean, if you were playing with a bunch of homeless bums, and that's all they had was $10 in their whole life, then you could legitimately say, okay, but if you're playing with people who, obviously, like Dan here, who has the internet, and can afford the internet. Yeah. He can afford to lose $10 and not think about it. So, you know, you're right. I think in this case, we you're never going to be able to get them to play legitimately for their, you know, okay, so I lost 80 cents on this hand or $2, you know, so I'm not going to have, you know, that mochaccino at, you know, Starbucks tonight or something. So, yeah, you're right. It's hard to get any kind of respect for any raise in these kinds of games. But if they take it seriously and they really want to learn and they really want to get better at the game, whatever, then 70 cents is about the right amount, I think.
And Dan, I'll take this opportunity to apologize for my co-host because I can tell reading the email that you had to send us from the free internet access computer at the library. All right, so our hero decides to raise the 50 cents. I'm not going to fault him on that, but I think he did it all properly except for the micro limit surcharge.
Yeah. Well, all right, so there you go. I mean, it's pretty standard then because 3X would be 30. He had two limpers. That makes it 50. You know, 10 cents for each person that, you know, comes in for a limp. So that's pretty standard 50. I just went 70 because it is so micro.
Exactly. So he says the first position player calls, and so does a cutoff. So we're three-handed and obviously in position because we're on the button.
Right.
And we see a flop of ace of clubs, jack of spades, 10 of hearts. And the first to act leads for a dollar, and he's described as an aggressive, almost crazy player. But he's also good. He understands position and will fold. But he says to bet on that kind of board without the benefit of position tells me he has at least a piece of the board. And then the cutoff calls, and he says, whoa, this guy plays pretty tight. I've played with him before, and based on the conversation that I've had, I think he plays this way. He's not screw tight, but he's much more willing to fold if he doesn't hit. This tells me he definitely has something, and it's probably at least top pair.
Well, it's so tough because I would consider raising here.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were going to raise a regular dollar bet, you'd make it three. And then you have another guy calling, so you might make it more now because you want to make it difficult for these other guys to call on a draw. So you make it four or five. Well, you only have, what, 10 in front of you?
Well, $10 buy-in. We don't know where.
Yeah, so I mean, we don't know how much he has. But we have to assume it's $10 just because he hasn't told us any information. So if it's like $10, it could be even less. It could be 9 or 8 because he lost a couple hands. Who knows? Now you're betting about 50% of your stack on a legitimate raise. So would you shove? I would consider it. I mean, I don't know if I sort of extrapolated that they were playing it like it was a $100 buy-in. Would I really shove 100 here when somebody bet 10? I don't know. Maybe, but I feel like almost a shove is in order here. You know, yeah, could he have King Queen, and one of these guys could have that, and slow the middle guy could be slow playing it.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy, if he had King Queen, would he really bet out when I was showing aggression early? And if we're wrong, we have outs, we could hit a queen, you know, if it's out there. So I don't know. I feel like a shove is really in order, believe it or not. And if not, it's $10, buy in again, because it doesn't seem like they're respecting your $10. So why should you?
Yeah, it's a tough call not knowing the stacks here. But, yeah, if he bets one, I mean, a legitimate raise is going to have to be at least three, as you said. So, you know, if people are sitting around with $5 in their stacks at this point because they've winning them down, then it's almost ridiculous not to go all in.
That's a good point, too. I wasn't even thinking about their stacks. If they have five and you bet three, they're probably going to shove for five. Or if you bet four and they have six, you know what right. I mean? Now you're already, so you might as well, you're going to commit to 10 anyway. So I don't know what the other stacks are. That's the other problem with this hand.
Yeah.
But it's a good point. You know, if you know you're going to commit them to, well, I might as well just throw in the extra two. Now it's an $8 bet. You might as well just shove your 10. So, interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I guess the other thing, too, I'm going to pause here and say is I think maybe the $10 buy-in's too small for this game. As odd as it sounds, now that we're talking about it, right?
Yeah. Well, if you're online, that's what it would be. Right, if you had a 5-10 game, it'd be a $10 buy-in.
Right, but I think a better buy-in, and I don't know if you're capped at $10 buy-in, but if I'm going to play this, I'm going to buy it for 20. I think that gives you, you know, the most appropriate amount. Again, because of the micro limit surcharge, I think. But I mean, because it brings up the situation where a dollar bet after a 50-cent raise pre-flop is now getting us talk about shoving.
Yeah.
You know, that just doesn't seem right, but it is. And very defendable, just because I don't think our stacks are that big.
Yeah, because like you said, if it was a regular $1 bet that you're facing, you'd make it three, but you have a limper here too. You want to get somebody out, so you'd make it at least four. You bet almost a dollar preflop, so if you had started with 10, you only had 9. That's literally almost 50% of your stack. You know, so you pretty much think of a shove in here. Just a call. I could entertain a call, I guess, but do I really want them to get a free shot at, you know, if they have what appears to be Jack Queen or something and have a free shot at hitting a straight on me with a king, and then I have Ace King and I have two pair and he has the Broadway. You want to make them pay for it. You raised, you took control, keep control, and raise again, I think. I really do. I don't think calling's the right move here.
Okay. He says, both of these players play as well or perhaps even better than most 1-2 no-limit players I've come across, so I just call. He says, I want to see what the players do on the turn, and I have to admit I'm already worried. There's been a lot of slow playing tonight, and with no real threat of a flush, I could see one of these two playing a straight or two-pair this way. I realize they shouldn't slow play a two-pair, but they have many times tonight.
Yeah, well, it would have been nice to know that information before the hand started. Why would you not tell me all this stuff? So if he knows, this isn't fair, man. You guys aren't fair.
We just had a great discussion about how this would play. Now we got more information, so now we can reassess.
Yeah, but that's information he obtained before going into the hand and didn't give it to me.
Yeah, but we're not just talking about this hand. We're talking about this situation.
Oh, man. Well, I don't know if it would have changed. I still probably would have raised. Because you still want to, you know what I mean? I don't know. Just calling, and then what happens when they shove on the turn and a blank comes? Well, you're not going to fold. You have ace king.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I guess it depends if it's been a real passive game. You know, if it's been a real passive game, and I can expect that the bet on turn is going to be a dollar, and the bet on the river is going to be a dollar. You know, if I'm scared at that point, I might just, you know, keep feeding the dollars. And not get as aggressive as we are, but in the absence of that information, I'm going to assume that the turn bet's going to be more than a dollar, and the river bet's going to be more than the turn bet. And at that point, then let's just be aggressive now.
Yeah, because you're going to be out of money anyway at the end,
right?
So you might as well do it now and put them to a test rather than just get.
Yeah, and take the option of folding out of your arsenal, you know, because I think it would be easy to do that if you're already spooked right now.
Yeah.
But you got, I mean, what do they have? We got shots of at least shopping with them.
Right. Right. And if it's a baby two pair like Jack 10 or something, well, you could always hit your king or you get another ace or you could go runner eights or something and still make a better two pair. So there are ways out of it if you're behind. It just seems weird that it would call. I mean, I know he said that they had done that before, but the guy in the middle calling, unless he has the absolute nuts of king queen. Which, you know, and then wouldn't they have raised? It's kind of weird. It's kind of hard to put him on king-queen. It's possible, but it's hard to put
him on. Well, he says that there's a lot of slow playing going.
Yeah,
I can totally see a straight guy not raising there.
Yeah. King-queen is really
betting. And particularly, I mean, even in a real game, not a real game, I should say, into that, but I mean a higher stakes game, you know, if you've got somebody that behind you, they raised pre-flop, and now you've got some guy in front of you that's betting out on this board, and you've got king-queen here, I'm going to try to keep both of these in, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to raise here. I'm going to let the other guy try to make a move, which is what we're talking about doing, right? And let the other guy make a move, and then get my way, get it in there, even if I'm chopping with him. I'm not trying to scare anybody away at this point when I've got two active players.
You think these guys would have limped with king-queen?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, people will limp with king-queen all the time and, you know, get bigger stake games. Yeah. Yeah, certainly in a dime game, I would think.
Okay.
All right. So
we just called, and we're going to the turn.
Just called, going to the turn. The turn is the tray of diamonds. So our board now is ace of clubs, jack of spades, ten of hearts, tray of diamonds. And first to act bets 250 this time. And he says this is probably a proper bet, but it's a significant one for this game. And at this stage, this guy's an aggressive player, but I believe at this point he has something, and he thinks it's pretty good. I do rule out a straight for him, as he'd probably check, but there are lots of possibilities. Says the cutoff calls, this is an even more significant move for him. He must have a fairly big hand. At least top pair and two pair on that board makes perfect sense. Ace-jack, sure. Ace-ten, sure. Jack-ten, I think that's possible as well. Jack-jack or ten-ten, yes. Even a straight, yes. What can I beat here? Ace-queen, yes. But that's one hand of many in his range. Ace-nine is the only other one I put him on. I realize I'd probably fold ace-nine to a raise, but I think he'd play that.
Okay. So, it's a lot of information, and I think all of it I don't need to know. I think that I probably would let it go now because of the guy calling, too. At that point, what can you beat, like he said? The other thing is, if we had raised earlier to $3 or $4, which is essentially the same as calling here after calling a dollar, you might have gotten a lot more information.
Sure.
And now that you've in this position, you still have some information that one guy's betting and one guy's calling. But I think a raise would have made these guys, if they had just called your raise, then they may have checked to you, and then you could have checked and gotten to the river for free. So there are different ways of playing it.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I really think that the aggression on the flop was more called for than what we did. And so now I'm probably letting it go. I probably am now letting it go. I probably would have gotten the same information I needed.
It's really hard for me to imagine that we're good right now. Yeah. And really our only draw to get good is a queen for him, probably for a chop. So it's not worth it at this point. I think you're right.
Or it, you know, what would really suck is if you call and a three comes on the river and you're thinking, oh, I'm good now. I got two pair and jack 10. And then you're screwed. So, yeah, I think I'm probably letting it go now, which sucks. Because even earlier I said, are you going to fold on the flop if somebody shoves? Probably not. But it'd be tens. If you shoved and got another caller, then I would fold. But if it was heads up, maybe I call. But now I've got another guy tagging along. Someone's beating me here, and I got to let it go.
Absolutely. All right, so he's talking about the cutoff again here. He says, if this was the first position player, I'd probably call. His range is wider. A weak ace is certainly a possibility, or I may even min-raise, but I have just one pair. I'm also probably not comfortable calling a huge bet of the river, and you have to expect one in this case, I think. Despite my position in this hand, I fold.
Hey! I hope he's right, though. He'd be mad if he would have won.
He says a queen comes on the river, and the first position player bets $4. The second guy calls after tanking. First player turns over ace 6. Second player ace 9. And obviously we would have won. He says, I admit I play a little conservatively, and I worry when there's two or more players in hand on a dangerous board, and I've got top pair, even if it does have top kicker as well. I wonder if this is a weakness. It doesn't bother me that I play this way, but I've had lots of success. But I wonder what you guys think. And I think the problem is hopefully he's at the home game for social interaction and having fun.
Yeah.
Because this is not a game that I would be in that I could not get frustrated in. It's certainly not a game that's going to help my poker game if people are making these kind of moves with these weak holdings on boards like that or raising. So,
well,
I would say, Dan, don't change what you're doing.
Yeah,
let's
quickly go through something really quick from beginning to end. And you'll notice a lot in the previous shows, at least most recently, a lot of the problems that we think are coming from this is the betting. Hasn't it been betting a lot lately where we're saying if you bet this much, something else might have happened or something should have happened or whatever? Again, today, let's just take a quick look. He bet 50 cents, but we were talking maybe 70 or more because it was micro. If he had made it 70 or a little more, ace 6 and what was it, ace 9 may not have come along. They may not have. But even if they did, maybe you knock out one of those guys, now your head's up with them. Now the flop comes. Well, you had raised a little more. Maybe they respect your raise and don't bet out. But let's say they do bet out, and now you do the raise that we mentioned earlier. Does ace 6 really call your re-raise there? Does ace 9 really recall your raise? And then also, you're probably heads up at that point. I don't think you can have both aces coming along for a bigger raise pre-flop. But if you did, maybe you get them out for that $4, or you shove, like we mentioned, because it's already 50% of your stack, and now you're up against ace 9 and ace 6, and you scoop a huge pot for a 5-10 cent game. Yeah. So I think betting, really, all along, is what really gets you into trouble, is not betting what is effective in that game, in every game that we've come up with lately. It just seems like these guys aren't raising enough. They're not betting enough. They're not re-raising enough to take control back of the hand that they took control of pre-flop. It feels like that to me. I really think that if he had made it 75 or whatever pre-flop, that one of these guys would have dropped out, and then they made a check to him on the flop. He'd have bet $3 on the flop, and the guy would have folded, or he might have re-raised and you couldn't have folded, and then you would have seen that you were way ahead and you would have won the hand. So, to me, you should have won this hand. Not just because you had the best hand, but because you should have been in it and already have made them either fold or commit their stack, and you would have gotten it in with them gladly with top pair, top kicker, and a redraw to Broadway.
Excellent.
Right? I mean, does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, today's lesson, make sure you raise enough, bet enough, and don't play poker with the mafia.
And before I forget, I remind every folks, come out to Cordova Casino near Sacramento next Saturday and Sunday for our first Antia Poker Tour event. I will be flying out on Thursday, so I'll see you there.
Yeah, Scott will be there. All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.